Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Celtic State of Mind. My name's Brian Degnan, and today I'm filling in for Declan, who is in Italy, by all accounts. Now, I'm not sure he's signing for Atlanta, same as by Giakoumakis, but he is there, so I'm sure if there's anything going on, Dec will tell us next week when he's back. But
hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
You might be disappointed Dex's not here, but I'm delighted that Lawrence, Liam and James are here. Lawrence, how are you, mate? You know, going okay?
Yeah, going well, mate. You know, another 3 points at the weekend, another game ticked off.
Another interesting thing indeed, Lawrence. That's
nothing changes in Scottish football, eh?
Aye, it's a brand new start. Another guy who's never shy of an opinion is our man from Japan, Liam. It's an absolute pleasure, mate. But I have to ask you to explain that talk for some of the viewers who need to kind of collect their laptops.
Right, it's the current South Korea home shot, which is actually red, but for some reason my camera's showing it up as orange. I can assure you it's not O for orange, okay? Let's just put that one to bed right away.
Yeah, I think I've seen some of the comments coming in advance, Liam.
Aye, well, you know, I'm ready for it. I tell you, I had a fun time on Sunday. I played in as a goalkeeper for the first time in about 3 years. We had our city culture festival this weekend, and I did a beat the goalie contest, and I had about 400 shots rattled at me over the course of like 3 or 4 hours. So that was fun.
that sounds fun. Last but by no means least, we've got the youth division, but in no means the B squad. We've got young James McKenzie there. How are you, James? You doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing good. We've got a transfer deadline day special, but for the first time in ages, it's going to be a quiet deadline day at Celtic. But all that means, apart from perhaps Giakoumakis leaving, but as Lawrence mentioned, I had a lot to cover from the weekend.
Correct, a lot to cover. So we'll just do a quick roundtable of thoughts for the weekend before we move on. We've got a lot to talk about, not just deadline day, but the Mr. Martindale's comments around Celtic, sort of echoing a good friend of his, Beals, some transfer deadline day stuff, and a few other bits and pieces. So we'll start with you then, James. First of all, what was your overall thoughts of the weekend?
I thought it wasn't the most sort of gold standard performance that we've got used to under Ange, but I've said quite a few times in the podcast recently, at this point in the season, it's just about getting the job done. a 2-0 win at Tandice and 3 points. I'm sure we all would attain that before the game. It wasn't the most vintage performance, but we'd done what we had to do, and that's just what we need to do for this second half of the season. We mentioned earlier a couple of controversial VAR decisions. The penalty, I'm still on the fence about, the Kyogo incident, but I'm sure we'll have a lot more sterner opinions here in the podcast.
Sterner opinions is always what we want. In terms of the game, what I thought was interesting about the game was it felt like a really strong defensive performance. Now, it doesn't mean we were sitting in and soaking up pressure, but we just contained Dundee United. They couldn't really have any sort of threat. It looked such a controlled performance. Liam, what was your take on that?
I think controlled is a very good way to describe it, Brian. We you know, saw the game out, did what we had to do, not too flashy, but still moments of class where they were needed. And once again, despite the referee's best efforts and the blatant misuse of VAR, we still managed to come away with the 3 points.
Yeah, as Jim said, that's kind of ideal. Lawrence, we're going to come to you, but just before, on the sort of the penalty incidents, so the first incident with the keeper coming in, Kyogo, at first I thought it was a penalty, but I could see why it wasn't given. Like, if Joe Hart had done that, I could have been arguing, saying, oh, it's never a penalty. The second, the handball was a blatant penalty. What frustrated me the most, irrespective of the penalty decisions, was the fact that he blew decisively for one and then overturned it and then didn't see a really blatant one. It just seems, and it took so long to get it done. I mean, you mentioned VAR. I know you're dying to talk about it. Give me some of your thoughts, Lawrence.
Well, you missed out the third penalty decision. You know, Kyogo getting pulled back.
Oh, well, yes, of course.
You know, so, listen, for me, the first contact is his left hand to Kyogo's head. What's his left hand going up to do? And I think he's going up to hit Kyogo. Yeah, his right hand eventually touches the ball, but why is his left hand up there? You know, the Dundee United defenders pushing Kyogo into the keeper, he's savaged. You could have given a penalty for any three reasons, you know, really. He's went in to wipe out Kyogo. And people are saying, you know, that's what you want your keeper to do. You might do, but you're going to give a penalty away if he's going to get and wipe somebody out. Or you should. It's reviewed. Why he's overturned it, I don't know. It's probably the biggest frustration with refs in this country. There's no accountability or transparency. It's blame your decision. This is why I thought it was a penalty. This is why it isn't. Should be pretty easy because you know those two things. You just, for some reason, we don't share them. The other one he's missed, it's poor that he's missed it, but, you know, VAR's worked as it's done. It's a clear and obvious error. He's missed it. Why he's decided it's not a yellow card? You know, when you look back at things, Burnaby and Riley get yellow carded for it. And I know there's referees' discretion on a yellow card in the box, depending on, you know, the severity of the yellow card. And the Kyogo pull, why VAR haven't called that back, you know? He's pulled over in the box. Why the VAR team haven't alerted the ref? Who knows? Well, I think we know, but, you know, it's just so blatant now. The other game, you know, it's 10 games in a row where Mickey Beale has had a VAR decision or multiple decisions go for him in games, either not being referred to a VAR or a VAR being used to guarantee points and keep a title race going. What a lucky manager. Decisions
are like 10 games. He's a lucky guy, eh?
Well, you know, if it was a coin toss, you know, what is it, 10 heads in a row is something like 2,046 to 1 to happen. Now that's, you know, he's got 10 games in a row. You know, it's...
Yeah, one of your commenters coming in here, Lawrence, AJSC Tech. For me, both penalties were called correct, so I feel VAR is helping the Scottish game now. Liam, I'm sure you've had a bit of VAR experience in Japan. Who's your take? Is it helping Scottish game now? Is AJSC Tech right, or are you more in line with Lawrence's view that it's a bit of a shambles at this stage?
But to be honest, I kind of fall between the two because I think VAR is fine. It's the people using it that are the problem. There is, the technology works absolutely fine. I mean, in the J-League, it has been used for a couple of years now. No problems. And you don't have this ridiculous 5-minute wait so you can figure out how you're going to give Rangers a penalty, you know? It's like... it's just it, like Lauren said, it's so blatant now, and it's being shown up for just how blatant it is. And as I've said before, and I keep repeating myself, but I'll say it again, I use the analogy of the teenager that's told to go and wash the dishes and deliberately makes such an arse of it that his mum says, forget it, I'll date myself. That is what Scottish referees and VAR now. It is, it's just, you know, they're deliberately making stupid errors week after week so that fans like us are going to get tired and demand that it gets rolled back, and then any sense of accountability just goes out the window and they can go back to doing what they've always done, which is favour one team over all the others.
But Lee, it has moved it on, as we no longer have to put up with, oh, it's honest mistakes now. Oh, it's the heat of the moment. You know, no, that's taken away. We're no longer told it's honest mistakes. So what does it leave?
That's it. That's the problem.
Therein lies the question. It's funny, going to come to you, James, obviously, young journalist, and you've been at a few pressers and stuff, and one of the things that I think is really important to highlight, so we spoke with VR a lot, and like the way we speak about the rest, we just want consistency. One of the things, Ange, I remember he was asked a couple of things about VAR, and he just said they're no interest in talking about it, kind of worth hearing about it. And obviously since, he has spoken about it a couple of times. But, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, James, but from my understanding, Ange hasn't complained about decisions, he's complained about the amount of time it's taken. Like, I don't think he cares either way if he gets a decision or not. I think it's just the lack of consistency and the frustration. And I think he also said that in Australia, it's been used for years with no problem. Which your take? Which been your vibe for the pressers and stuff?
Well, I've not been able to get along to many of the games this season, but I'd have to really agree with Ange, because I was at a game with my dad a few weeks ago. I think it was the St Mirren game. And the length of time that it takes to come to these decisions, and 90% of the time, it's the most obvious of decisions. Like, I don't get how it takes long to do an offside call. You're either offside or you're not. There's no sort of opinions about it. It's just facts. And he's taken it to the highest level, Celtic have. We've went to the SFA about VAR. I'm not too sure if that was on the time it's taken or the actual sort of handball decisions that have plagued us these sort of last few weeks, these last few months. But the fact that Celtic have went to the highest level, we've went to the SFA and we've complained, and we've not seen any improvements. There's decisions all across the board. It's not just Celtic games as well. It's not just paranoia from Celtic. And the fact that we've complained at the highest level and there's not been any sort of improvement, you just got to wonder where the improvement comes from. It's a rushed technology, and Andrew's got every right to complain about it. He's just lucky that it hasn't had a negative effect on his team where it has dropped us points yet.
Well, see, the interesting thing about that is, I agree with you, I think you're spot on, but about the effect on the team, Lauren, it's going to come to you. The way we play football, fast moving, always throwing the ball in quickly, you know, quick rotation, stuff like that, when we have such a long break for these decisions, do you think it disrupts us? I mean, I know everything's suggested it doesn't because we've been winning, but it's going to be really frustrating if you're playing in that team and you just want to keep going.
Well, it definitely disrupts us. And players of other teams have said that, you know, it's good for them to get a breather. It's good for them to get that. And sometimes it's like 4 or 5 minutes. But
which isn't adding a lot of time either.
But when we watch other games, bad decisions are made a lot quicker than they seem to be made in Celtic games. And you're going, well, you know, what is it? It's a clear and obvious error you're using it for. If it's that clear and obvious, why does it take 4 or 5 minutes to get to the... Was it no clear and obvious then? After 5 minutes, it's really clear and obvious. Well, I think the definition, it wasn't clear or obvious to begin with, and it shouldn't have been getting used. But going to the highest level, you know, going to the SFA or SPFL, you know, that's an organisation whose head of refs get dismissed because he's biased, whose referees went straight because they lied to us. President of SFA lost his job and get a, what was that, £300,000 payoff, and we only get 250 compensation because he cheated Celtic. I'm not too sure that's the kind of people that are ever going to be fair to Celtic. Now, you can look at, look, there's 40 professional clubs. No other club has went through that with these organisations. And I think it's kind of mad to expect fairness from them. I think they should be going to UEFA and FIFA, because we've got proof that this organisation is inherently biased against us. If you want to take it wider in society, if you look at kind of, you know, racially aggravated crimes or sectarianism, whatever they call it, you know, people of Irish Catholic descent are more likely to suffer from that. Why would that not be made? You know, if that's true for that part of that, you know, Scottish society, why is it not true for this part? And especially when you've got the proof of it, I think Peter Martin said on his thing, he says, you can't say it's paranoid, you've got proof of it. Why had to resign? Hugh Dallas had to go, the next one is right. You know, there's numerous cases where it's been proven. So there's other cases where we just haven't had answers. So where does it go? And I don't think it's the SFA. You need to go to UEFA and say, look, these guys don't know what fair is.
Liam, use your take on it. I mean, where do we go next for here? Because it feels like, you know, there's always this conversation about aesthetic or paranoid, but as Lawrence says, there's plenty of evidence to suggest that there's been an imbalance over the years. Is this new, like, the VAR issues we're facing, is this part of that? Is this something we're just going to have to learn to overcome? Or is it time to take a stand and as Lawrence says, go to UEFA? What do you see happening?
Well, one thing I would say just before I get into that point, something that I know dawned on me the other day, right? I get the G League games on the telly here, and I watch every Celtic game. So if you balance the two, I probably watch as much G League football as I do SPL football, because I don't really bother with any teams apart from Celtic, right? So I'm watching a couple of hours of each league a week on average. I could not name one Japanese referee if you asked me to, right? And yet I know the names of about a dozen Scottish referees. Now, taking bias, taking perceptions of paranoia, taking evidence of corruption, bigotry, whatever, out of it, why is it that I know all these people's names and yet I don't know any of their counterparts in Japan? Is it because their counterparts in Japan realise that the players are the centre of attention and not them? You know, is it because they, as soon as they get a shout in their ear, they think, well, there's something needs to be looked at, I'll go and look at it. And they go and look at it right away. There's none of this, what do you think, aye, all right, okay. And they spend 5 minutes having a blether. No other league I've seen does that. Every other league that I have seen that uses VAR consistently, it's ref gets a shout. All right, there's something we're not sure about there. I'll go and have a look. And it's within 30 seconds of getting the shout. He's at the wee telly on the side of the pitch. And a minute or so later, you get the decision. Maximum 2 minutes. Whereas in Scotland, it can sometimes take 3 or 4 minutes before they even go to the camera. And that is just unacceptable. The technology is there, but the people to use it are a combination, I think, of biased, incompetent, and at the end of the day, just arrogant. They just don't like the idea that they might be wrong. And that is what seems to be the overriding thing above all else, is they just don't like having their authority questioned by anybody. Because, again, it's part of that wider societal problem that Lawrence has just spoken to, where this group of people think they are beyond reproach, that they are above everybody else. And unfortunately, the SFA and the people who run Scottish football and some of the people who run wider Scottish society play into that by pandering to these people at every opportunity. But that's me, had my wee rant. I'll sit back down.
It was a well-earned and well-proposed one, so thanks very much for that. James, you've had a wee rest, and we're going to come and we're going to brighten up a wee bit. But before we even talk about the football, we have to also talk about something outside of the football bubble to an extent. We know that Mr. Beale across the city has made comments about being lucky and about drawing attention to Celtic's finances, and apparently now so is David Martindale. Did you see David Martindale's comments, and what did you think of them?
I haven't seen them, but from what you're saying, I'm assuming they're about finances in a similar vein to the lucky man sort of quote that we've all grown very accustomed to. But I don't buy into that at all. Celtic's finances were generated by the players that we developed at our club into top-tier talent and the players that we sold on for high fees. Just because Celtic don't let our players go with 6 months on their contract to go for free in the summer and get no money for our prized assets doesn't mean that we're lucky. Celtic are just smart in the transfer window. We've seen it again this window. We've seen it every window that Andrew's been at Celtic. Celtic work smart in the chance window. It's not luck. I'm pretty sure with the sales of Juranovic and Giakoumakis, I think our net spend will still be positive as well since Ange took over at Celtic because of the talent that we've shipped off. So this sort of lucky man financial, there's always going to be a financial gulf in Scottish football. I get that, but it's the players that we've sold. We made this money.
I think you're right. I think the thing I always remember is, yeah, there's a financial gulf in Scottish football, but there's a financial gulf in football anywhere. And I've never known, you know, football to be, you know, budgets to guarantee success necessarily. We've spent badly in the past. We spent well recently, I think. I should be corrected in the figures, but I think even before we sold Giakoumakis and Juranovic, I think we were still like plus 2.6 million compared to the players we've let out and bring in since Ange's been there. So that's just smart business. Liam, the other thing about budgets as well is just because you can buy players, you need to buy the right players in the right system. I've yet to hear Ange moaning about other teams' budgets, and we played Real Madrid, we played Leipzig. I didn't hear any moaning then. Is it just excuse making now at this stage? And how much of a factor do you think budgets play in?
This is another thing which seems to be, if not unique to Scotland, and certainly played up a lot more in Scotland than it is anywhere else. You know, you never hear, for example, in Spain, you never hear Valencia or Real Betis saying, look, it's no fair, Real Madrid have got like so many superstars and we haven't. They're a bigger club. They can afford bigger players. That's the nature of football. Celtic are the biggest club in Scotland. Therefore, we are going to have the biggest player budget. That's just the way football works. Now, you can argue for and against the merits of that, and should we have like a draft system like they do in the US? You know, that's another debate. But at the current time, the way European football is structured, Celtic are the biggest club in this country, so they're going to be the biggest spenders. And again, like you say, it's about how you spend that money well. Because if you look at England, for example, look at the money that teams like Spurs, Newcastle, historically, teams like, Chelsea threw around. And how much did they actually win as a result? You know, Chelsea were nothing until they became a billionaire's plaything, right? Whereas Celtic have historically always been a big club. And so we've always had that little bit of extra financial kick. You know, even when the club was, you know, in its darkest days in the mid-90s, we were still pulling in 35,000-40,000 every game, which is more than, you know, almost any other club in Britain. You've only got maybe five or six clubs in Britain that can consistently hit that level, whether they're winning or losing, you know? So I really don't get the financial argument at all. It's a non-argument. And I'm disappointed in Davy Martindale because, to be honest, he's a guy who, up until recently, I've had quite a bit of admiration for. He's a good example of someone who makes a few bad decisions in their life but manages to turn it around through hard work, graft and strength of character. But ever since he was originally linked to the Rangers job and didn't get it, he's been on this kind of a, oh, please notice me, I'm the ultimate Rangers fan kind of thing. And it really is quite pathetic, really, and it's beneath a guy of his intelligence, you know.
Yeah, I've got to agree to an extent as well. Like, I think he's done a really good job. But, Lawrence, this is where I find it interesting because if I was Livingston manager and I'd overperformed on a small budget, that's what I'd be talking about. It's all about look at the job I've done, look at how well I've done with such a small budget, not were they only better because they're richer. Because that doesn't seem to ring true. If you look at the league table over the years, budgets don't really dictate it, you know, especially in other leagues, but even in Scotland. What's your take? Is it just should, you know, managers at teams like Livingston and elsewhere be just focusing on their own stuff and promoting that as opposed to looking for excuses before a game?
Mate, it's just another 80-minute league comment, you know. You'd an idiot across the side, you might be, oh, if the game's only lasted 80 minutes. Mate, and if we played 14 players instead of 11.
If Manny was
So you're kind of, he's entitled to his opinion, he's doing a good job there. And, you know, budgets do have an effect on how successful you are. You know, they're not the only thing. You know, I think back late 19th, early 20th century, up to that point, we used to share the gate money, didn't we? Regardless if you were home or away with clubs. You know, maybe they'd bring something like that. And again, who knows? But it's nothing he's going to change be sitting there moaning about it. He's, Livingston's somewhere only going to have 60,000 season ticket holders and more than Kilmarnock Celtic. You know, the reality is he's doing a decent job with them. You know, but I think Ange's doing a more than decent job. In comparison, you know, would they be the points per pound champion of the league? I don't know, mate. Just make them the champions of Europe. Who cares? It's a nonsense argument. It's like, you know what? Celtic are well-deserved top of the league, you'd be as well acknowledging that and, you know, and seeing how well he's done himself. And I don't see if he'll kind of spin the press and put on at hand and listen to his full press conference, because there may be a spin from the press in there. But maybe he's trying to take a wee bit of pressure off his player, trying some mind games. But listen, I think Ange is maybe of the opinion, you know, eagles don't fight with sparrows, so I don't think he'll be drawn any war of words with Ange.
Eagles don't fight with sparrows. Absolute top draw, Lawrence Connolly. What a quote for the day. I love that. I'm going to use that. Speaking of quotes, we've got CGMC coming in. Celtic have money because of their supporter base. That's to your point as well, Lawrence. Money doesn't bring success. To your point, Liam, it's the manager who brings success. And I'll stay with you for now, Lawrence. Ange is, you know, we've watched lyrical about his performances. We've watched about him as a man. We seem to be picking up steam after a sort of period where we were winning, but maybe it was a bit flat at times. How do you see him approaching Livingston? Same approach as well, rotate? Does he take into account Livingston's tactics? How do you see that lining up?
Well, I just kind of told you, he picks a team, you know, his strategy never changes, his tactics don't change, but he does pick the personnel depending on who he's facing. I expect more of the same, you know, Livingston to sit deep, a few long balls, try and win some free kicks to, you know, about the halfway line to throw some stuff into our box. I don't really expect Livy to come out and play football against us, you know, but, you know, Martindale's teams are what they are, and I think we'll have enough to get through it. You know, as James said about this part of the season, it's just ticking the games off, get the 3 points. Ange will, you know, he's a multiple winner in leagues. He knows that it's the running you really need to be hitting top form. So we now seem to be picking up a wee bit of pace again. It was a wee bit quiet, but, you know, it was 3 points, 3 points, 3 points. And I think with the additions, I think Iolata looks brilliant. Well, looked okay, what we've seen of him. So, yeah, I think he's managing his team, you know. He's got them into 9 points clear. The games are starting to count down now. And, yeah, I think we are starting to play a lot better. I think we win our next 10 games, you know, it puts a League Cup in the bag, put, you know, progress in the Scottish Cup, and almost put us out of touch in the league, I think. You know, you'd be one game away from winning. So I think it's got his team where you'd want it to be at the end of January. You want it to start getting into their stride and start running forward. His signings seem to have been good, what we've seen on him, that he's brought in. The people that are leaving, are we really going to miss them? You know, I don't think so. You know, Johnson's come in and he's looked okay. Tony Ralston proved everybody along last season, so the boy all looks okay. So I think it's onwards and upwards under Ange.
Onwards and upwards, I like that. I think that's absolutely correct, especially if you look at last season, where we got to this time and then just really motored on, and he spoke kind of consistently about making sure his players improve. And just a last note on budget, Big Red went, excellent point. So Johnston won a double, and what was their budget? That was in the year Callum Davidson should have got manager of the year, but didn't he? Wonder why. James, so in terms of the game against Livingston, we know Ange probably won't change his approach. Will he change his team? Do you think he'll look for more cross into the box? Do you think he'll rejig it a bit, or do you think we'll see the same team that we started with the other day?
I think we'll see something very similar, because Livingston are going to set up in a similar way to the way Dundee United set up so defensively, because the last time we went there, we put 9 goals past them. Every shot was going in. And I think Livingston, I don't think I've watched a Livingston game or the highlights would have been in awe of the football that they play. We know the style that they're going to play. We know the way Martindale's going to set his team up. And I think we'll see something very similar. Perhaps any changes, maybe Kobayashi or Maeda, I could maybe see coming in, but that's if anything. If there's, it's not more of a prediction, but it's something I would like to see. I'd like to see Sead Haksabanovic in the team. I'd like to see him. I'm not sure if he's had a proper run out since the break, but a game against Livingston, why not give Haksabanovic a go? I think he's a very good player.
Yeah, I'm kind of inclined to agree with that, actually. I think guys like Maeda is excellent, but I don't know if he's going to be great against such a low block. I think, Haksabanovic and Jota would be good, just to have a bit of trickery and also Kyogo's movement. There's a guy we're going to talk about, Aaron Moy. We're going to talk about him in the next segment, but before we talk about some of the individual players, Liam, what's your thoughts? Would you change things up a bit? Do you think you'd rotate a bit more? And if so, who would you expect to see and who would you like to see?
See, I'm actually going to slightly disagree with you there, Brian. I think Maeda would be the guy to bring in for this game, because I think that a team like Livingston that are compact and are going to dig in, you want people who are going to run at them and stretch them and tire them. So I think if you've got the interplay with Maeda and Kyogo, and I think possibly Haksabanovic coming in as well if he's fully fit, that would stretch them all over the park. Jota is more about skill and finesse, and I don't know if that's quite how you approach Livingston, because you know they're going to be the hammer throwers, they're going to put the boot in at every opportunity. And I think Maeda's maybe a wee bit more robust than Jota is in that respect. But I also think it could be a chance for Iwata to come in, and maybe if we wanted to play a slightly more, put a bit more steel into the midfield, that could be possible as well. Problem with that being that our man Aaron Moy is effectively undroppable at the moment, so I don't know about that. But I think certainly the front line could be changed up a wee bit. The back line for me is pretty much set now. As long as everybody's fit, that's going to be the back line for at least the next couple of months. The onus is on Kobayashi to try and displace Starfelt. I think there's a possibility there. But, it's always going to be Carter Vickers plus one for as long as he's at Celtic. And the question is that going to be Kobayashi or Starfelt? And we'll find out over the next couple of months. But Johnson's fine at right back. Taylor is the man at left back. The only questions for me are possibly switching up the midfield a wee bit and maybe switching up the wide players up front to try and stretch Livingston with a bit more pace.
That's a really good point. I never thought of it that way. I want to talk about the defence, actually, just before we move on to predictions. So, Lawrence, I'll come to you first. That back four, is that the back four for the rest of the season? Is that our strongest back four? Can you see any reason that Ange might rotate it? What do you think?
I think Taylor and Cam Carter-Vickers are definitely the two that's nailed on for the positions in terms of strongest. I think with Starfelt, it's probably going to keep it.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
So that familiarity with both Taylor and Cameron Carter-Vickers, so they'll probably keep Kobayashi out. Although I liked what I've seen of Kobayashi, it's going to be harder for him to break in there. You've got a set of three. Is Johnson going to keep Ralston out? Ralston's coming back from injury. Don't know. Sometimes at the weekend there, you're thinking, Ralston would get a better ball across. So I think the right back still is, if Ralston hadn't been injured, I don't think we'd have seen as much as Johnston. So I think that jersey's still up for grabs between the two of them. The other three, I think they're guaranteed to play the majority of the games for the rest of the season in most positions.
And what's your prediction for tomorrow?
As in the score of the lineup, I think it will have Taylor. I'm going to put Johnson in, and I'm going to put 3-0. Midfield, I'm going to go Moy, McGregor. And I think he's going to start Turnbull against them. I'm not a bit Turnbull's bit as far, but I think we'll start them against them. I'll go Maeda, Abada, and Kyogo.
Top man. All right, James, your prediction and your lineups.
Prediction, I'll go 2-0. I think we're just sort of quietly trundling along. 3 points here, 3 points there. I'm perfectly content if that's how Celtic are going to play the next few months. But as far as team prediction goes, Joe Hart's obviously nailed on. Lawrence raised an interesting point there that Ralston, I completely forgot about him in contention for that fullback. So I could maybe even see Anthony Ralston coming in at right back. Starfelt and Carter Vickers, you can't separate those two. I'll mention it on every single podcast until we eventually do lose a game with those two at centre back. Domestically, unbeaten with those two there, you don't drop them. Taylor left back is pretty nailed on. The midfield, I'd have the Moy, McGregor and Rio Hitati. Front three, Abada, Jota, Kyogo, I think. That's probably a fairly solid team, get the job done against Livingston.
Liam, young James is happy with a quiet trundle. Are you hoping for something more thunderous and a different result, or are you along the same lines?
I would have agreed with that until I read Martindale's comments. Now I hope we go out and absolutely pump them. So I'm going to say 4-0 to Celtic. I think we might put on a wee show. I think the team, like we've said, Carter Vickers and Starfelt are the back two. I think Johnson comes in at right back. I think Taylor obviously is a mainstay there now, and Bernabe has not done enough in the few games that he had to try and dislodge that. Midfield, I'll go Moy, McGregor and Hitati. But if we're a couple of goals up at half time, I could see O'Reilly and Iwata both getting game time in the second half. Front three, I'll go with... I'll go with Kyogo through the middle, Maeda left and Abada on the right. But I think, again, Haksabanovic and Jota will play a part in the second half, assuming that the game is put to bed.
Liam, I just want to ask, before we go into some of the... I want to ask your opinion of some of the new guys we've signed. You can get some insight. But before that, just a quick roundtable. Thoughts on Starfelt? Because he has been criticised a fair bit. Personally, I've always said he's a good defender, but I do worry about him in possession. So we'll just go around. Lawrence, to you first. Has your thoughts changed on Starfelt? Do you still think he's a long-term sort of centre-back first choice next to Carter Vickers? Or do you see Kobayashi taking over?
I think he suffers from that disease Celtic centre-halves seem to have in Scotland, the amount of pressure they come in for from the press, and I think there's a section of the sport that jump in that. The amount of hassle that he gets and his performances put in it, I just don't see his performances deserving that amount of detraction he gets. He's been absolutely solid for us. Sometimes it looks a wee bit uncomfortable. He's naturally right-footed. He's playing left centre-half. So he's a wee bit slow maybe getting rid of the ball, but I think he's been brilliant for us defensively. Him and Cameron Carter Vickers not lost the game domestically. Can you really say much more than that, can you? You know, when he plays a partnership. So I think it's been great, but it's interesting in Scotland the amount of, you know, we've had it with countless centre halves, you know, Mistorovic got it. There's loads. It just seems to be Celtic centre halves get this absolute pounding from the Scottish press. Don't seem to get across the city, you know. I may have had some really dodgy centre-halves that just seem to, don't get the same level of scrutiny. I'm just surprised at the amount of Celtic fans that kind of jump on that Scottish press-driven narrative at times. I think Starfield's been crapping for us.
It's a bit like Jamesy Forrest, isn't it? He always gets, I think, a lot of unfair criticism, and it plays into a similar narrative. Danielle, earlier on, regular contributor, sorry I missed your comment, Danielle, but she'd mentioned what you said. Carter Vickers and Starfelt have now lost a league game together. James, what is it going to take for Starfelt to sort of get over this criticism? I say, because I've been a part of it as well. I've said at times where I'm much preparing him on the right. I think sometimes that there is a mistake in him, but it's hard to argue with, you know, his success rate. What is it going to take? Is it going to take an unbelievable performance? Is it going to take an injury to Carter Vickers? What do you think, James?
I think he's done enough. If people aren't convinced, then I think there's no convincing. I've been over the Starfelt bomb scare hysteria since play about this time last year. I've always thought since any was fairly settled. I think some people just have the first and just first league game, that game at Tynecastle. I think Starfelt had only trained with the team the day before. I think people just have that ingrained in the back of their mind, and they just recall that whenever they think about Carl Starfelt. I've got no idea how some people still don't rate him, considering how imperious he and Carter Vickers are as a partnership. And if people aren't convinced now, then I don't know what it's going to take, really. We've seen some good derby performances and some big domestic games in Scotland as well, where he's looked sort of fairly solid. I really don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's... When you analyse Starfelt, there is always that slight caveat, but you're right. I mean, he's been absolutely spot on. Him and Carter Vickers have been a tremendous partnership, and, you know, it's interesting that Carter Vickers never gets moved to the left, so you have to think, well, Starfelt's maybe that bit more adaptable, so absolutely spot on. Liam, I'd mentioned earlier, so we spoke about current players, and a few current players that have came in. You maybe tell us a bit about. We've seen a little bit of Kobayashi, but Iwata and O, we've had brief cameos on. What's been your first impressions, and do you have any other sort of background knowledge you could share?
Right, well, first of all, the thing with Starfelt is that ultimately, I think in the fullness of time, Kobayashi will prove to be a better player. He has not proven that yet, so at the moment, Starfelt is still the main man there. But I think by the end of the season, you'll have Kobayashi making the push to get into the team and to be the regular starter. And I think for Europe next season, we're going to want a naturally left-sided left centre-back. And I think from what little I've seen of Kobayashi, he seems to be physically imposing a bit more than Starfelt as well. And as you know, I made the prediction when we signed Kobayashi, I said within a year, he will be the one of the twin centre-backs for the Japanese national team alongside Koi Takura, and I still think that will be the case, and that's not going to happen unless he becomes Celtic's first pick, so that kind of ties into it. I think we'll run with Starfelt until the end of the season, but we will find him being switched out for Kobayashi, or of course, as Danielle just says in the comments there, that it is the possibility we might get offered funny money for Carter Vickers, because he has been one of our star players thus far. So there is that unfortunate possibility to consider as well. Iwata, Player of the Year in Japan. Players Player of the Year as well, which I think tells you a lot. Pretty much the only guy who's been getting more headlines recently in Japan leading up to him signing for Celtic than Iwata was... Mitoma there in England, who has been turning up, scored a beautiful goal the other night. I don't know if you saw that, but he's doing really well down there. Iwata's being looked at as the kind of as one of the great big prospects for the next few years as well. Not quite sure if he will get as much game time as I think Kobayashi will in the fullness of time, but I do think he is going to become a mainstay. You know, Callum McGregor has probably the best engine of any Celtic captain I've ever seen, but he cannot keep playing 70 games a year if he's going to, you know, make it to the age of like 35, 36 like Scott Brown did and still be playing at the top level. So Iwata is going to get probably 10 to 15 games a season at least just off of the back of that, and that's before you factor in any injuries. The good thing is, though, that with these new players coming in, you know, a striker, a defensive mid, a central defender, that's the spine of a team right there. And none of them are at the moment first picks, but they're all players that we could put into those positions with a high degree of confidence if we had to. And O is an interesting one because, I'll be honest, I was really disappointed we didn't get Cho Gae-sung, right? Because I was really kind of fired up for him. I thought he looked the part. I picked him out at the World Cup when he scored those two goals against, I think it was Ghana. And I said, this guy looks like the real deal. And, you know, I was saying to my dad, oh, Celtic should make a move for him. And he's like, all right, son, that'll not happen. Then 2 weeks later, it happened. But... actually, looking back at some of the highlights of the K-League from last season and looking at their respective stats and whatever, over the course of the whole year, just taking the World Cup out of the equation, Oh was actually the more consistent performer and looked like a better player. So we may actually have, you know, I don't know if I buy into the idea that he's been linked with Celtic since September. I don't know if I think that might have just been a wee bit of a platitude towards Celtic, because he's obviously delighted to be here. But I do think that he might have been our second choice, but I think we may actually have got the better of the two players, as it turned out. And, you know, we only saw him for a few minutes the other day, but he looked pretty comfortable when he came on. So, doesn't look like a 21-year-old fish out of water, that's for sure. So, I think, yeah, it's looking very promising. And like you say, any major injury now, we have a defender that can step in, we have a midfielder that can step in, and we've got a striker that can step in. That's enough to get us through to the end of the season, no problem.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because one of the debates has been, do we need another striker? And since we're on transfer deadline day, let's talk about some of that stuff. So, Lawrence, what's your take? Are you comfortable with Hugo and O as your two, and then maybe Mieda Abada coming in to fill that third spot if need be, or somebody for the B squad coming up? Do you think that's a scenario, or do you think we need a third striker?
So I think we need a third striker, whether that's somebody for the B squad, Joey Dawson being the guy that's banging them in and who we've not back a loan bid for, or someone else. I definitely think, yeah, we need a third striker. We saw that last year, you know, with Kyogo and Giakoumakis both getting injured at the same time. I think it just leaves us too late. Dawson's banging them in, but it is the lowland league. You know, I think we really need to see what he's got at a higher level. Did we not let him go on loan? Because, as I said, you know, a six-month loan down south is better than 6 months in the B team. Is that because Ange's expecting to use him at some point or give him game time up here? Hopefully, you know, because, you know, the ideal thing is that you're developing your own players, isn't it? It's not that you're going out and having to spend millions and being really lucky, you know, with players that you bring in, because, you know, you've got the money to spend and you don't pay guys crazy wages and let them run down their contracts and stuff. But, yeah, hopefully Joey Dawson can make the step up. But, yeah, I think we need a third striker. And I'm hoping it could be Joey Dawson. I don't think we're going to buy anyone. I think Ange just confirmed at the press conference today that has done business this window. So even if I wanted somebody else in, it doesn't look like they're coming. So let's hope we see Dawson. You know, this second part of the season and he gets some minutes.
And just if we say Joey Dawson isn't ready to come up, just before I go to James. You, Lawrence, would you be comfortable with Maeda or Abada filling in if there was a certain injury crisis? Do you think that's a strong enough lead man to push us forward to the title?
You don't have a choice. Is it enough to win the title? Well, it was enough to win it last year when both were injured. So, yeah, it should be enough. We're 9 points clear. James Forrest can tuck in there as well. He's played the striker. So, we've got options. It would be better, you know, if we had more trusted options, I think, are more natural strikers. We'll see what Dawson brings. I'm hoping, you know, we'll see him second part of the season, and I'm comfortable. We don't have any option, given that we're not going to bring anyone else in.
So a couple of comments coming in. One of the comments was that it would be absolutely magical if Cho came in as a last-minute signing. It was certainly better than John Gilkenny of a few years ago, so here's hoping. And Edward Y comes in, could be Nesbitt after Hibs snub latest offer. James, I want to come to you on that. So, first of all, your overall thoughts, if we don't sign a third striker, is it a concern? And secondly, do you think Nesbitt would come in and be comfortable as a third striker? Do you think he would overlap? Do you think he could challenge Hugo? What would your thoughts be if we were to bring him in?
I've always thought that having three strikers for a position where we're only going to be playing one of them would be a bit of overkill. I'd rather, if you're going to have a third striker, a young player like someone in the mould of Joey Dawson, like Lauren said, but it's overkill until one of them gets injured. And then you've only got one of your top quality strikers left and you're having to turn to play someone out of position or take someone for the B team. So I wouldn't be against getting a third striker, but I don't think we'd have to do it sort of right now. But just on Kevin Nisbet there, I wouldn't mind Celtic getting Kevin Nisbet, to be honest with you. I feel like there's been quite a lot of ignorance to Celtic signing players from other teams in the Scottish League recently. Players like Josh Doig and Aaron Hickey, we all turned their noses up at. They go elsewhere, and then they're getting linked to all these top moves. So I think we just need to take a chance on one of these players, because if he's getting in the positions and getting the goals at Hibs, he's going to get more chances playing in our Celtic shirt with a better service he's going to be getting at a team like Celtic. So why not have a wee punt on it?
Exactly, have a wee punt indeed. So it's been kind of established, Liam, that Postecoglou, although he has been naughty in the past and told us a wee fib on occasion, but he's saying he's not going to bring anybody else in. Is there going to be much movement out? We know Giakoumakis is apparently signed for, I think it's Atlanta, I don't think he's signing for the Japanese team. 4.3 million apparently, although nothing's official yet. Who else do you see going out, if anyone, Liam?
Well, the important thing to remember with Giakoumakis is that if he doesn't go tonight, doesn't mean it's not happening, because after today we can't sign anybody, but we can still sell players to both America and Japan, because their leagues don't start up for another month or two, so their transfer windows are still open. There's several places where players could go to. You know, another possibility is some of the Scandinavian leagues possibly taking some of our players on loan if we want to develop them. I think for players like Dawson and Lawal, who look good at B team level, but B team level is, with the greatest of respect, you know, just a couple of grades above amateur at the moment. Going to somewhere like Norway or Denmark for a 6 months or something might be the perfect way to toughen them up and see if they've got it physically to play at a first team level. Because, you know, if you can handle playing for, you know, for example, Brøndby or Rosenborg or something like that, I think you can probably handle the average Scottish Premier League game. So, I think that's an option that's not really been discussed, but I think could well happen. The strikers thing, I think if Giakoumakis goes, we're still fine, because we have three strikers. We have Kyogo, we have O, and we have Maeda, right? People seem to keep forgetting Maeda is a striker being played out of position the way he plays for Celtic, right? He was a striker at Yamaga. He was a striker at Yokohama. He is still a striker, centre forward for the Japanese national team. And that is why he went to the World Cup and Kyogo didn't. For all I think Kyogo overall is probably a better player, Maeda's more effective through the middle, certainly for the Japanese national team. Probably not for Celtic, but for the Japanese national team, Maeda is the more effective goal scorer. So there's a reason why most of the hype before the World Cup was around him rather than Kyogo. And I think having three strikers is perfectly fine. And remember, in the past, Abada has done it. James Forrest has done it. Haksabanovic did it at his previous club, and also, I think, for his national team before he's played as a striker. So you've actually got three full-time strikers and another three who can potentially deputise. I mean, James Forrest scored a hat-trick for Scotland once when we played him up front, if you remember. Right? He's shown that he can do it at the top level. So, no, I think if Giakoumakis goes, we are fine as we are right now.
I'm inclined to agree, actually. I prefer Maeda through the middle to outwide, as I've said in the past. But, James, in terms of players going out, I know Conor Hazard's back with the club. He's been linked to another loan move to Ross County, I believe. Welsh is still a question mark. Apparently, there's still clubs circling around Welsh. If Welsh was to go, surely we have to then bring in another centre-half. What do you think?
I'm not 100% sure. I think it would be a bit too late for Celtic to tout up and then sign a centre-back unless we've got some in the backlog. But I think having sort of Boson Lowell around there, him getting his first-team chance a few weeks ago shows there is trust in him. And we do rate him very highly. We see a future for him at the club. So I'm not sure there's going to be a bit of an urgency to sign a centre-back at the current moment if Stephen Welsh goes. But I would rather Welsh... The team he's been linked with now is Sheffield Wednesday, who I believe are in the English League One. I think Stephen Welsh... He's a backup player here, but I think he can do better than the English League One, considering in the summer he was getting linked with Ligue 1 Toulouse, and this time last year he was getting linked with Udinese in Serie A. So if those are the club he's been previously, like, with his standards haven't dropped massively since then. So I think he could do with a bigger move than that. But if it's sort of regular first team football we're looking for to get, then fair enough. Just our other outgoings, there's just Yakimakis that I'm expecting today, perhaps in the evening, to coincide with the sort of the American time zones. But apart from that, there's sort of nothing really major.
I think that my concern would be if Welsh goes, that only leaves us Starfelt, Kobayashi and Carter Vickers. You know, we talk about only having three strikers for one position, we can't possibly three centre-backs for two positions. So I'm slightly concerned at that, although I suspect if it does go, there'll be someone else coming in. Obviously, with guys like Idiguchi, Abogard, who we spoke about, might be leaving. But Lawrence, I want to ask you about a guy who is at the club and who is a fairly new signing, but has been absolutely in excellent form for a large part of the season, Aaron Moy. I know initially a lot of people were sceptical when he first coming in. What was your take on it initially? Has your mind changed and how do you see him fitting into the team? Is he here for the rest of the season? Is it going to be hard to displace?
You know, I think it's now McGregor and him in midfield. You know, before it was Carlin and two, I think it's now McGregor and Moy. Initially when he came in, I was lucky, kind of, David was signing us down at Peter Scarf Club down in Linwood and Chris Sutton was speaking. He's like, he's a £5-6 million player for free. You know, Ange knows him. He knows how he plays. What's not really like about this? He's a known quantity to the manager. It's worth £5 or £6 million, you're getting him for free. So I think he's coming in as a squad player. And you know, Ange is very fair with the players. You know, he gives you your chance and it's up to you to take it. And, you know, he's definitely taking it. You know, and I think he's nailed down that second place in midfield, which, you know, puts kind of Hatate, Turnbull, O'Reilly really under pressure to get in third place. So, yeah, I just think Moy's been cracking for us, you know, and he's really starting to control games and run them from midfield, which, you know, it's what you'd expect for someone of his age and experience. Yeah. Another signing that luckily has worked out for Ange, isn't it?
I know. The luck never stops. He wants to put on the lottery. The interesting thing with Aaron Moy, it always feels like that's the example of shut up and trust in Ange, isn't it? Because people were questioning and then look up now. Everyone that watches the show knows that I love Matt O'Reilly. I think longer term he's got an insane amount of potential. And, you know, trust if Flyby is not getting near the team now because Aaron Moy's there. I mean, what was your take on it? Obviously, he's 29 now, but pace is never really his game anyway. Do you see him, you know, being the first choice midfielder for the next while?
It's his place to lose at the moment. You know, 6 weeks ago, we were saying the same thing about O'Reilly. Then O'Reilly had a wee dip in form, and Aaron Moy has taken his chance. It's going to be that way from now on because we are a squad where if O'Reilly or Moy switch places, if Iwata comes in for either of them, if Kobayashi comes in for either Carter Vickers or Starfelt, it's not the massive drop in quality that it would have been a year or two ago when, you know, you end up having to play Callum McGregor at left back, right? It's not, those days are behind us now. This is a squad game and we have got a good 18 to 20 players who are all, would walk into any first team elsewhere in Scotland. So it's absolutely, it's the way a club should be run. It's the way a club of Celtic size should always have been run. But it's only really since Ange came in that we have really taken this whole squad game to a new level, I think.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. One other midfielder I just want to talk about before we finish up for today, and I'll come to you first, James, Callum McGregor. He's been absolutely sensational again. Since he's been captain, he's stepped up. I'll admit, I've always loved him as a player, I wasn't sure what kind of captain he would be, how he would go about things, you know. But he's took the bull by the horns, 400 appearances. You've got Scott Brown, 619. Billy McNeil, 787. Now, he's probably unlikely to capture Caesar's appearances, but James, can he overtake Brown's? And where does he stand in the great captains in Celtic's history, in your opinion?
Well, I've not really got the best knowledge of Celtic captains, as Scott Brown was my captain for the entirety of sort of my early childhood. But Callum McGregor is near known 10 years now, I think, as a sort of first team player at Celtic, and he's, I think ever since Brendan Rodgers came in, Cal McGregor, he really sort of improved and stepped up his game. And there's a reason he was the far and away choice to become the new Celtic captain when Scott Brown left. And he's really shown that. You can see how he's taken over from the team talks and the huddle, and just the way he conducts himself on the park. You can tell a lot of players, when you've got a captain, you need someone you can sort of lean on, you can rely on, someone that you, when the going gets tough, this is the player that will step up. And Cal McGregor's shown time and time again that he does that. That's what he does in that Celtic shirt. And I think he could get close to Scott Brown's tally. As we've said, he's been playing so many games every season for so long. The only thing that I could see stopping him from getting close to Scott Brown is if another injury creeps up that keeps him out for a while, which, touch wood, isn't going to happen. But he'll go down as a Celtic legend if he isn't already, no doubt.
Absolutely agree with that. It's hard to argue, Lawrence. What's your thoughts on Callum McGregor? Not just as captain, but just in general as a player.
Listen, as a captain, well, as captain, it's just right at the start of his time, isn't it? You know, as a player, he's one of those guys that just never lets his standards drop. He seems to be season and season, he just improves. You know, great ambassador for the club. The players all speak highly of him, so... You know, anything your mate is supposed to do or whatever, plenty of time to speak to everyone. So, you know, really personal guy with high standards. And I think we Ange is his manager. That could be, you know, it feels like the start of something special, doesn't it? You know, I think Callum is going to, you know, as a player, he's already got, you know, a litany of honours. He's only going to add to name as captain. And I think he's going to be a captain, known of a really special Celtic team. I mean, I think it was Lehman said, you know, Angie's teams get better kind of year two onwards. So I think Callum is hopefully going to do something in Europe next year, mate. That's the, I suppose, his dream and her dream, you know, to go further, to make a mark in Europe.
You know, it seems like that's Angie's sort of focus as well, isn't it? Liam, just quickly for you, just conscious of time, Callum McGregor. Mm-hmm. Is he underrated? I think he is. I think despite the pace, he's still an underrated player. What's your sort of overall view of Callum McGregor, the player?
He is. I think the Celtic support now realise how good he is. But I think outside of us, he is undervalued because he's not had as many Scotland caps as he should have, which historically is an issue. If you look right back to the likes of Billy McNeil and Jimmy Johnson, you know, guys that should have had 100 caps each for Scotland and never even got near that. You know, but it's great because he's one of us. You know, it's great that we still have, even in this day and age, we're bringing in so many superb players from all around the world that our captain is a boy who is a Celtic supporter who's become a man who is now leading the club. And that is a great tradition that we can be very, very proud of, and long may it continue.
Fantastic. Listen, excellent words to end on. We spoke about Celtic legends, and we're going to be meeting a few of them soon at Gracie's. We've got Tom Boyd coming up, and then Danny McGrain as well, so keep posted for that. We'll hope to see as many of you there as possible. It's always great to hear from you guys in the comments, and it'd be lovely to speak to some of you in person. Lawrence, Liam, James, what an absolute pleasure. What a great way to spend a Tuesday afternoon. Thanks very much, and I'll see you all soon. Take care. We'll be right back.